Chapter 7 of When Thief Meets Thief by Harry Stephen Keeler. Thus we went seaward, hopeful of seeing the coast of Uncle Sam's country rise on the skyline one fine morning. It was a little after dawn when Sam and I leaned on the rail, watching the coast of that infernal country grow gray behind us, and glad of every yard of distance between it and ourselves, after all we had endured there. "If ever a man pulled another out of hell, Sam," I said, "it was you, when you threw that stone through the window. You saved my life."
"Oh, Boss Jer, didn't you do just so much for me?" Sam inquired earnestly. "In that stinking rotten place where you got no nothing to make the job proper, you made me the good tooths again. I'd sure be dead in there if it wasn't for your doctoring."
Then the voice of the captain broke in on our mutual thanks to each other and caused me to turn around to face him. "Mr. Hammond, I believe it is Mr. Hammond," he said. "I've just had a wireless from the port we've left, and—"
"Boss, you promised to take us for the $500, Sam broke in, seeing the man's intention on his face. "You promised."
"To take you away from there, yes, and I've done it," the captain said. "But I've more than $500 to think about. The wireless message I've just received, and my wireless operator acknowledged it, is to the effect that a boat was seen to come alongside my ship last night with two men aboard, and was later found drifting, empty of any man at all. Also, two prisoners have escaped, and they want me to submit to search in case the two prisoners are aboard." "There is no right of search on the high seas," I objected. "Quite so," he agreed smoothly, and I saw he was of the sort that will argue a way around anything, smoothly and detestably. "But there is the question of my license to trade in the ports of this republic, and if I refuse to be searched, I lose the license. Since the boat belongs to a company, I lose my job if the license is revoked, and, well, to put it plainly, for the sake of $500, I cannot afford to take that risk. No man in his senses would do it." "But you have already taken the risk," I pointed out. He shrugged his shoulders, and I hated him badly. "You may think it implies that I am to take you to my destination, but that was not stated when your colored friend made the contract. It was simply to take him and one other aboard, and I took that risk. But I have to submit to search, and if you are found—" He ended it with another shrug, and I hated him still more. But he held the whip hand. A captain on his own ship is a god of sorts. "Then what do you propose to do with us?" I asked. "I'm going parallel with the coast," he answered, with the air of one who has already made up his mind and will not be moved from his intent, "and putting in off Pueblo San Diego. There's no harbor, and I shall have to lie off. It's a roadstead, and Pueblo San Diego is their northern frontier town. I had a talk by wireless with them and agreed to lie off there for search at 11 tonight. And you can bet your back teeth the search will be thorough. I can't hide you two." "Then," I asked, "are you throwing us to the sharks?" "Not quite so bad," he answered with a smile. "Frankly, Mr. Hammond, I don't want you aboard. I'd be happier without you, for they may find out if I land you at New Orleans when I get there, and I'd lose my license to trade in their ports just the same as if they'd found you at Pueblo San Diego. Therefore, I propose to hand you back your $300 out of the $500 you paid for your passage and drop you overside into one of the ship's boats. And pray to God it's cloudy till you're far away from the ship to be connected with it. I'll see that all identifying marks are scraped off the boat before you board it." "You know that means death for me if I'm caught," I asked. "I can't help it, Mr. Hammond," he answered. "If we refuse this, what is the alternative?" I demanded. "Well," he looked over the side, "I'd say there's quite a lot of sharks in these waters if you go in without a boat." "You mean you are absolutely determined to get rid of us in this way and to give us no chance of evading the search?" "I've got my license and my job to think about," he replied sullenly. "Right," I said. "Hand over the $300 and we'll take your offer. But put in a couple of good automatic pistols with it. You say Pueblo San Diego is a border town. We may be able to shoot our way across the border and get clear in spite of you. For I felt that, having escaped a hanging, I had no need to fear what might happen in this border town, given money and sufficient armament for self-protection. Moreover, I put a different value on life from that which I had entertained before the spell in the dungeon. I was far more willing now to take risks, and Sam, I knew, would follow me to hell and through it, so fully was he devoted to me. Them pistols will cost you $25 apiece, and I'll throw in 500 rounds of ammunition for 'em, the captain stated. We will agree to that. Hand over the remaining $250 right now, I bade, and then go away till it's time for us to get together over final arrangements. I don't like your face. I don't like any of you for letting two American citizens down like this. He produced the money in silence. Possibly his conduct weighed heavy on his conscience a little. He was throwing us to the wolves and knew it. But over that and everything, his license and his job ruled him. Some men are like that, I know. Probably he would have been glad to know that we had been caught and killed by the mestizo politicians of that infernal state, for then he would have been absolved of all complicity in our attempt at escape. I know that in his place, in any place for that matter, I would never have played it low down on a fellow countryman, as he did on us too. But he was a yellow nature, obviously. At about 10 o'clock that night, in a black darkness, since the moon was past the full and not due to rise till later, Sam and I went over the side of the freighter and down into a boat towing alongside, with 4 oars laid in it for our use. The ship was then about 3 miles short of the roadstead of Pueblo San Diego, and lay with her engine stopped for our descent, after which she would go on to her anchorage. We had the 2 automatics for which I had asked, and the $250 of passage money, which, although it belonged to Sam, he insisted on dividing, so that we were possessed of over 200 good American dollars apiece. As I shoved with an oar against the vessel's side after we had settled ourselves in the boat, I heard the telegraph on the bridge give an engine room signal, and then the rumble of the propeller. The freighter drew away from us, and presently we were rocking in the wash of her movements, while flakes of the loveliest phosphorescence I have ever seen lightened the darkness of the waters and showed me Sam's eyes as he turned his black face towards me.
"What we going to do now, Boss Jerry?" he asked.
"It looks to me as if we've got to go back to Purgatory," I told him. "It's not as if I know anything about the lie of this country, but we can't get anywhere in this boat while we may by land."
"Yeah, boss, but if we got to go back in, how we going to get back out?" he persisted. "Maybe we land back in that our prison."
"We must chance it," I said. "Head for shore now." It seemed to me the only possibility. At my request, the captain had let me study his charts, but they gave only the coastline, showing Pueblo San Diego as about 10 kilometers inside the actual frontier, and the nearest town to northward, beyond the frontier, a good 60 kilometers away from it. What lay between the two, I had no idea. My plan, then, as far as I had any, was to get ashore, buy provisions for the boat, and then attempt to row up the coast to land again outside this infernal republic. The ship's captain, for some reason that I could not fathom, had refused to provision us. I think he wanted to drive us ashore and hoped we would be caught to avert suspicion from himself. There seemed no other reason for his refusal. We laid to the oars. I could see the freighter's lights distant to the north of us, and on shore sundry twinkles of light that revealed the existence of Pueblo San Diego, which the volume of sailing directions gave as a town of 6,000 inhabitants. Its lights, like the steamers, were to north of us, and we rowed directly for the coast, my intention being to land outside the town and then reconnoiter. Each dip of our oars raised ripples of phosphorescent light, and the wake we left was a path of luminous glory. So still was the hot, starlit night that I heard the rattle of the freighter's anchor cable when she reached her station in the roadstead. Sound carries farther across water than over land. I know, but it was strange to hear that sound come out of the distance. and I remember cursing the captain again as I heard it. We drove up, after about an hour's rowing, onto the beach of fine white sand, beyond which showed the blackness of a line of foliage of some sort, and rising out from it the tops of 5 palm trees in a line parallel with the coast cut the sky. They could give us our direction, I knew, when we came back to the boat, if we had to return in darkness. The tide had been 3/4 of an hour short of full when we left the freighter, as I had ascertained before going down into the boat, so that it was now slack water of full tide, and since we pulled our craft up onto the sand, taking the aid of each big roller that came in and broke on the shore, I had little fear of getting afloat again before I returned to it with the provisions I meant to secure. All the same, I paid out the rope I found in the bows to its limit while Sam went up over the sand with the other end, and by dragging the boat a couple of yards up from the water's edge, we had enough line to make fast to a stunted shrub up at the inner edge of the beach. So that was that. We buried the oars in the sand close by the shrub in case anyone should take a liking to our boat in our absence, and went off northward along the inner edge of the beach towards Pueblo San Diego. We left nothing in the boat for the all-sufficient reason that, apart from automatics and money, which we wanted, we had nothing to leave. Moonrise told me that it must be near on midnight when we struck a sandy track and entered on it, heading inland and still towards the town. We passed one silent, unlighted hut, and another where a dog barked furiously at our nearly silent footfalls. The track gave place to a pothole, badly kept highway. To the left I saw a big white mansion with lights showing through the Venetians of 2 windows on the ground floor. It was set back from the road in a shrub-spotted garden, divided from the road by a 5-foot white wall, and in the gateway I saw a sentry, with a rifle, lounging. He took no notice whatever of us, and we passed on. Midnight struck from a clock somewhere ahead of us. A bend in the way revealed to us what I conjectured, rightly too, was the main street of Pueblo San Diego, though they call it the Avenida. There were electric lights on standards at infrequent intervals, still alight, and giving us views of the frontages of some well-built stone buildings, interspersed with adobe and wooden structures, mostly closed and silent at this hour. But not all the town was asleep by any means. We saw loungers in doorways and passed 2s and 3s of little brown devils on their way home or to mischief. Some of them stared at us, as shabby and by this time weary, we tramped on. But most of them took no notice of us. 2 drinking dens, I saw, were well patronized, and the little tables on the sidewalk were occupied by groups of these little brown devils, of the same breed as those who had guarded us in the prison from which we had escaped. Then, a mile or more beyond the sentry-guarded mansions, which stood just outside the town, we came to a brightly lighted establishment with more little tables set out on the sidewalk, and the murmur of many voices from its patrons. A linen slip pinned along the frontage announced it in scarlet letters as the Posada de Sandoval, and advertised drinks of probably local brands together with Angostura and cognac. It was of superior type to the 2 drinking dens we had passed, and on the opposite side of the Avenida from it I paused to look across. "Sam," I said, "if we knew this infernal language, we could get all we want for the boat inside there. They sell grub as well as drink."
"Sure we could, Boss Jerry," he assented. "That's the worst of purgatory, and you said this place was. That always a catch in it."
Then, as we stood gazing, a voice came to us across the Avenida, and to my amazement and delight it was an English voice, while the words I heard seemed to indicate that Providence had directed us here.
"Hell's bells," it said, "of all the godforsaken holes on earth, this shore is the worst." Then in a shout of wrath, "A dentist, a dentist, my kingdom for a dentist."
English it was, not American, as I knew on hearing it. Beside me, Sam drew a sharp, audible breath and whispered, "The good Lord," in an awed way, As for me, I made one step towards the voice, drawn by almost irresistible curiosity, but then halted. My dentistry on Sam might be known here by this time. These little brown devils might have talked about what had gone on among the two escapees from that hell of a prison where we had been held, and if I betrayed myself as a dentist here, probably it would all be up with me and with Sam, too. Such were my first thoughts, but on top of them came a realization of the amazing coincidence that made a man shout in English for a dentist in such a place as this, exactly at the time that I happened to be passing. Somehow it seemed more than mere coincidence, a direction by providence, fate, or whatever you choose to call it, which I must follow. I took two more steps to cross the avenida to where the voice had sounded, and then Sam had me by the arm and stopped me.
"Boss Chair," he said, "if we guns there, we gonna get caught for sure. That place no good to we. Too much folks is there."
"We've got to get our grub somewhere, Sam," I told him, "and it looks to me that Shout is our guidepost. Mine, anyhow. Come along." He followed me then. The lights of the posada shone down on the men at the little tables and showed me at once the man who had shouted. He was clad in decent English clothes, and his face was white, not chocolate-colored as were most of the others. He had with him a little brown-faced man in a uniform that fairly glittered with gold braid, finished off with a Sam Brown belt from which depended a holstered pistol. The two of them sat near the outer edge of the rows of tables, and I went straight to him and looked down as he looked up. I saw a lean, aristocratic-looking face and a pair of steady blue eyes. He had, I could see, the quiet dignity of a well-bred Englishman, and for a moment, gazing down at him, I questioned inwardly whether I had not been mistaken after all. He did not look the sort of man who would shout like that, but appeared altogether too well-bred and quiet. Still, I risked it, while his companion stared up at me curiously. "What do you want with the dentist?" I asked. He leaned back in his chair, and a faint, satiric smile grew on his lips. Those blue eyes of his took in all of me, traveled down to my water-sodden, dingy trouser legs and up again, dwelling for an instant on the bulge of my coat pocket where my automatic rested, ready loaded, too, and came up to my face. Then he spoke.
"And what the hell has this to do with you?" he inquired calmly.
"Oh, nothing, maybe," I said as easily as I could, while Sam peered past my shoulder and this Englishman took in all of him, too. "I happen to hear you screech for one, that's all."
"Do you know where to find one?" he inquired with slightly more interest. "Because, well, I'm stumped on it here."
"I am one," I told him, and risked the consequences of that statement. A man of my own color and race, I reasoned, was not likely to betray me, even if he knew I was the escaped prisoner.
"Well, by Jove," he remarked with faint satiric amusement, "I should never have guessed it. Sit down, won't you? Not that you look like one, or like anything, in fact, but do sit down."